And today I'm here with Pete Tackauer. Pete's from the London, England area. He is a retired police officer. He was the police. You might have known him better as D.S. Tackauer. I'm a big fan of British detective shows. And so, Pete, but thanks for being with us today. And
thanks for inviting me. I'm honored.
Yeah, I've been admiring your stuff for some time, and so I'm really glad that we're able to get you on here today.
Well, thank you for admiring my work. That's made me feel pretty good.
Yeah, well, I know. Yeah, I know. You just, you know, you never know, because you put this work out there online, hundreds of photos, and maybe you don't hear much, and sometimes it feels like you're shouting in the dark.
Uh-huh.
At least I feel that way sometimes. But Pete's got a really strong collection of street photos on Flickr. And, of course, we'll have all the information in the article and at the end of the show, tell you how to go find it. And later we'll be talking about a lot of the photos he has there. So anyway, Pete, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about your background and how you happened
sure.
to get into street photography.
Yeah, well, I'm not far from being 60 years old, 60 in January next year, and born and bred in a borough of Redbridge, which is one of the eastern boroughs of London, and I now live out in Essex, which isn't as bucolic as you might think. I'm about 20 minutes by train from London, so London's one of my favourite places to go for street shooting, and some of the bigger towns in Essex as well. Those are my sort of feeding grounds. I'm one of seven children. All of us, thank God, are still alive, still around. And I'm a grandfather to five children and two stepchildren, which keep us busy in my retirement. And I'm married to a lovely lady, very lovely lady, my wife Linda, who keeps me alive, keeps me sane, keeps me breathing.
Yeah, that's always good. That's always good. So how long have you been doing photography?
Well, I've always had a camera. I remember as a young man, I had a Canon AE-1 and a Canon A1, and probably when I was in my 30s, I had a Canon Ixus, little tiny thing about the size of a postage stamp. And I always liked taking pictures, but I was never one to be bothered to learn how to take a good picture. I was a snapper. And I've not mentioned it before. I mean, I've got Parkinson's disease. I've been diagnosed since 2007. And the medication can make you fixated about certain things. And for some reason, I don't know why, but Parkinson's and the medications for me chose photography.
Hmm.
Amen to that. I'm glad it chose photography and nothing else. So you won't hear many people thank Parkinson's for anything, but I'm thanking Parkinson's for introducing me to photography. Sounds bizarre.
That's pretty interesting. It's a good thing you didn't choose, gambling or
bank
robbery
right.
Or something.
Yeah. I could have got more money to buy more lenses.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. As long as you don't gamble it away.
No, that's right. That's right. Yes. So really, intensely, I suppose you could say, and I'm compelled quite often to take pictures. Probably since about 2011, I've been a photographer. That's what I call myself, a photographer, since 2011.
And do you do mainly street photography, or are you doing anything else?
Well, I started off doing that, and then I sort of started doing city nightscapes as a bit of an antidote, because my street photography in the early days tended to be very dark and very gritty, and I needed a bit of light as well, and I considered that to be an antidote, to go out and sit, take my time to take a shot and be reflective about what I was doing. And I like the bright lights, whether it be London, Sydney, Melbourne, New York, wherever. I really enjoy that aspect of my work. And there's sort of two totally different types of photography, as you can imagine. A lot of it's street stuff, very immediate, where you're on the go and an instant, you know, you can lose a shot by being a half a second too soon or half a second too late. But with the night work, it's you set your tripod up and you can relax and chill a bit, you know. Unless you're chasing the blue arrow and try not to lose it.
Yeah, I notice you have a lot of really, really beautiful cityscapes, and in your collection. And I mean, personally, I consider that street photography too. You're still, you know, out in public.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
you're not taking pictures of interesting people, but you know, the places are just as interesting too, and what you do with it.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, other people like my work enough to buy it from occasion. I don't make a living from it. And in fact, if it became a living, I probably wouldn't enjoy it so much, because I like to dance to the beat of my own drum, really, and photograph things that I enjoy rather than actually have people get me to go and photograph what they want. So I do what I like, and if people want to buy it, that's fine. If they don't, that's no problem for me. I'm chilled about that. But Bank of New York bought 15 of my pieces for their boardroom and meeting rooms here in the UK. So, hey, that's marvellous. You know, I'm a nobody on the photographic scene, and they bought my work, and I was thrilled with that, absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, how did they happen to find your work?
Well, there's a guy who does my framing, and unfortunately, his office is opposite the Bank of New York. The guy who was in charge of their refurbishment went in there one day and said, you know, anybody who's got photographs of New York, London, and he said, well, I've got a guy, and he named me, and they looked at my work online, and they said, oh, we'd like to talk to him. So I spent an hour and a half or 2 hours with this guy in his office going through reams of my photographs on Flickr. Yes, no, yes, no, maybe, yes, no. And that's how it was. And, you know, they bought prints that were about, I think the biggest was about 5 foot wide framed by 4 foot deep. And the smallest ones were sort of A3, just larger than A3, A3 plus maybe framed.
That's pretty interesting. Did you have them printed, or did you just provide them with the file?
Oh, no, I printed up. I had them done as a giclée print from a printer in not too far away from me, and the guy from the gallery did the framing.
Wow, that's boy, what a find! That's quite an honor.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was thrilled with that, and I'm just stunned that a bank like Bank of New York came to me, to, you know, to provide them with these pictures. It's when they could have chosen any number of established photographers, you know, who may well have done a better job than I did, but they liked my work. Because I think originally they were going to put it out to a number of people, but they liked mine so much that all of the pictures came from me, you know, and I still wake up in the night going, my God.
Do you ever go in the office and see your work hanging in there?
See the work, yeah, and it's gives me an immense amount of pleasure to see them hanging there. There's another guy fairly local to me who's bought half a dozen from me, and I've sold a few others from time to time where people know that I'm a photographer, and they ask, have you got a photograph of this, that, or the other? And I say, well, I've got this. What do you think? And they say, oh, yeah, I like that. And they'll buy it. So, yeah, I've sold a few. But it's not a regular thing. In fact, it's very irregular, I would say. Sometimes you get a burst of like 3 or 4 purchases in a couple of months, and other times you don't hear anything for a year. So that's just how I like it, to be honest.
Yeah, several years ago I did a series for a local telecommunications company. I did photos of employees who had been there for 20 years and photos around the office, and they hung them all throughout the office facility. And anytime I went in there, it was really a thrill to see that work. Of course, then they had a management change and decided they didn't want them anymore.
Sure. Yeah, but you had your time there, and I think with everybody, you know, it's in life as well. You can splash about in the pool of life, but after you get out, no one knows you've been there. And it's you take your chance when you can, and I've taken my chance, and my work's there, and eventually it'll go. But I can say that I've had my work there, so nobody can take that from me.
Yeah, that's a great thought. And I guess that's a good example for just not leaving your photos on your computer or stuck in a drawer somewhere.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, that, because with digital, I think you're far less inclined to look at your pictures than if you actually had them in an envelope as a sort of a piece of photographic paper. Because nobody ever says, hey, let's have a look at your photographs on the TV, you know. You get an album out and leaf through it. You get a box of photographs out and leaf through it. But very few people, I think, look at digital photographs. It's almost like a fire and forget, I find quite often with people.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, there gets to be so many. And I still find it hard to manage. I keep working at it. But
yeah, I've given up managing mine. I don't manage at all. But we can get onto that later on.
Okay. It's probably a better way to go.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I'm really interested in is, okay, you spent a lot of your years as a detective,
yeah,
a police officer. So you have to be, I imagine you have to be very observant in that job. And I just wonder, how does that affect you as a photographer? Or maybe it's such a major part of your DNA you don't even think about it.
It's a good question, that. But my wife and I were inveterate people watchers, and we'll sit in a cafe or a restaurant or a bar or something, and we'll look at people coming in and out, and we'll pull them to pieces or praise them to high heaven, talking to each other. So we are people watchers, and I think street photography is a natural progression from that. But as a cop, people said to me that they could always tell I was a cop, because if ever I walked into a room or onto a train or something, I was always looking around. Just making sure the thing was safe, the place was safe, or whatever, looking for hoods or whatever you want to call them. So I suppose it is an actual thing. And with street photography, I think it has helped, because you tend to see sometimes things developing before rather than at the time it develops. So I think it's helped me to anticipate things possibly more than somebody else might.
Yeah, because you're actually... when you're a police officer, you're a trained observer, right? You actually pay attention to what type of car somebody's driving or what color clothes they're wearing.
Yes, I remember unusual things. And in fact, sometimes I'll take a shot, sometimes I won't. I mean, I could see something that's worth shooting, but I'll actually just say, I'm not going to shoot that. I'm just going to keep that in my eye and in my mind. And in the years time, I can recall it in the way I want to recall it, as opposed to having it presented to me on a piece of paper or as a shot that I've taken. It's sometimes nice just to not to shoot, just to remember it as you want to remember it.
Wow, that's a really good idea.
There was one example I can give you, and we were in Hong Kong on our way to Australia last year, and I was at a Buddhist temple, and there was a child on a mat with the parent there standing behind the child. The child was 3 years old, maybe four, and was fervently praying, and I just stood transfixed. I had my camera in my hand, but I could not take a picture of that child. It fascinated me, and I felt so emotional. I had a huge, great lump in my throat and tears in my eyes watching this child praying so intensely, and I felt that to take a picture, it would have been wrong, because it would have been a piece of digital ephemera, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And I can recall that child in my mind's eye very, very easily. And it has more impact on me than if I looked at the photograph, if I'd taken it. And the only other time I felt like that was at the War Memorial in, I think it was Melbourne. And there was a piece of sculpture there that was so intensely emotional, I cried as soon as I saw it. Hmm. And I couldn't take a picture of it at first, but I did later on, and I regretted it, because the picture cannot match how I felt seeing that piece of sculpture, which was of a person laying on their back, arms outstretched, legs hanging down off this plinth in a crucifix form. And the pain and the agony that was displayed in that sculpture was just unbelievably emotional for me. And even now I can feel the emotion sort of welling up. And I wish I'd not taken that picture, because it just, for me, it just did not do it justice. And I don't think anybody could do it justice.
Yeah, I know you feel. I was, last year I was in Washington, D.C., and I was by the Iwo Jima Monument. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Outside the Arlington Cemetery. And there was a busload of really old gentlemen, World War II veterans. So like in their 90s, 80s and 90s. And they're all in their wheelchairs and their walkers. And they all had the same color jackets on, but they were standing by this monument, and some of them were crying, and it was a very emotional scene, and I just couldn't lift my camera to take a picture of it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And it's funny you should mention Iwo Jima, because I've got a photograph on Flickr, and I called that Iwo Jima, because it's tourists in Sydney, and they're climbing some steps with umbrellas in front of them. And when I saw the form that they'd taken, and if you search on my Flickr stream for Iwo Jima, you'll see why I called it that. You can do it later, or you can do it now if you like. But instantly, as soon as I saw it, I took the picture, and as soon as I took the picture, at the same time, I thought, Iwo Jima, and God knows why. Well, I do know why, because it's just the form that they took. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you got it in front of you at all.
No, it's what popped into your head, so obviously it was meaningful.
That's what popped into my head. It's just the shape, the four or five people formed with their umbrellas, and I just instantly thought Iwo Jima. I only mentioned it because you mentioned it yourself.
Yeah, speaking of Sydney, I see you've been doing a lot of traveling in the last year.
Yeah, we decided because of the Parkinson's, as you know, it's a degenerative condition, and eventually I'll get to the stage where I won't be able to travel anymore. So we're filling our boots. We're traveling to the places that's on our hit list or our bucket list.
Yeah, so I see you've been to Australia,
New
China.
Zealand. Well, Hong Kong, well,
Yeah,
on the
Hong
way
Kong.
through to, yeah. China's on the list. Cuba's on the list. America, going back to America is back on the list. We want to travel from west to east or east to west. We'd like to take in, I'd love to go back to New York. I love New York. I adore it for street photography. It's marvelous. And the energy of that city is wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
And then use San Francisco as the antidote, you know, the more laid back, cerebral sort of, where, yeah, whatever man type of town, you know. We like that for different reasons.
The left coast. Well, gee, if you're going to travel across the country, you got to swing through here.
Yeah, well, you're in
I'm in Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio. That's right, yeah.
I'm on the North Coast. We call it the North Coast.
Yeah. Well, there's some people from my family, well, with my family name, that lived in Cleveland back
Really?
in the 30s or the 40s, yeah. They might still be there with people my surname. I don't think they were connected to my family, but it is an unusual family name.
Well, I'm going to have to look them up.
Yeah. Kai Cuyahoga, does that ring a bell?
Yep. Well, that's the name of our county, Cuyahoga County.
Right, okay, that's it. Yeah, Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, yeah.
Name of the river. And then there's a city called Cuyahoga Falls, which
Yeah, I've
is.
seen family names there, but I don't think they're connected.
Oh, okay. Well, you can make them connected.
I could do.
Come on over.
Well,
It's a.
my great grandfather actually, although I don't know when he died, he was on the stage. He left his family here in the UK back in the late 1800s, and he went to Australia and New Zealand on a music hall tour, never came back. And I've tracked him down across Australia and New Zealand to Shanghai, to Hawaii, and across the states from San Francisco to New York. I know he died there, but I don't know when. And that's a search at the moment for me. But he was bad. He married bigamously about three or four times while he was over there. He was a rascal.
What a story.
He should have been a cop.
Maybe he was.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. He was what you call a top boot dancer. He had
What's
big
that?
boots on with bells on, and he was a bit of a comedian.
Wow.
I thought that very much, though.
This was your grandfather, huh?
My great grandfather.
Great grand. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, rascal.
So, going to ask you. So you mentioned you have Parkinson's, which
Yeah.
is makes life very difficult. I mean, how has that affected your photography, either, in terms of what you have to do differently to get a
Yeah.
shot, and how has it maybe even enhanced it in some ways?
Well, it's made me intense about photography, that I'm always thinking about photography. I'm always looking for a shot, and that's one of the things I torture myself constantly, thinking about the shot. Everything I see and do revolves around photography at the moment. It's something I can't shake off. I love it. And, you know, if I'm going to be compelled to do it, then I might as well try and be good at it. So that's what I try to do. But in terms of my ability to take pictures, a lot of my photographs are quite soft, I think, maybe because of the tremor. So I can never get something as sharp as other people will get without the use of a tripod. And I've found a camera which fits me perfectly. And I seem to get the best out of it. And this is my current one, which is the Ricoh GXR with the 21mm Zeiss f/2.8 lens on it. That's lovely. I stick that on f/8 or f/11 and 250th of a second auto ISO. And I focus at 2 meters. Bang, bang, bang. It's a cracking camera. Lovely. I love it.
Yeah, I see. Actually, one of the things that caught my eye about you, I think I don't even know if you saw this. I put it in a comment on Flickr, but I've been using the Fuji X100 and X100S for a while, and I actually sold mine a while back.
Yeah, I got rid of mine as well. Yeah.
I immediately missed it, and then I saw the article that Don Springer did about your photo walk. And I think you were holding one in your hand. I go,
That's right.
I've got to get another. So I went back to it
Really? Yeah.
after seeing that in your hand. So.
Yeah, well, it's a lovely camera, that Fuji, and I've had some beautiful pictures out of it, especially in some of my night shots. And but I found it too, because I do my photography. I tend to do my street stuff one-handed, and that's my right hand.
Mm-hmm.
I can shoot sixpence out of the sky with my right hand. It's my left one where I'd be spray and pray, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fuji just didn't quite fit the mm-hmm. hand. It's a bit too bulky. And the way I hold my camera, I tend to hold two fingers around the lens barrel, one top, one bottom, and then the bottom right-hand edge of the camera is in the palm of my hand. And I can swing that about and hold it steady and take the shots. And I just couldn't do that with the Fuji. It's just slightly too big mm-hmm. for doing that. And I couldn't get my finger around the lens.
Yeah, I could see how that would be difficult.
Mm.
Huh.
The other one I loved was the GRD3. That mm-hmm. was the other one, the other Ricoh. But I scratched the lens on that one, and I missed that one dearly.
Ouch! It's an expensive accident.
Yeah, and I think my best street photography, to be honest, came from the GRD3. My first stuff I did was from a Panasonic GF3.
Mm-hmm.
GF2. Was my first lot of street photography. Then I went to the GRD3, then the Fuji. I've had all sorts of things, and I've used the big Canon as well from time. I've used the Canon with fisheye on it, which was quite an interesting exercise. Fisheye lens, 70-200, the wide angle 17-40. But I tend to stick now to the GXR. I love that camera. Beautiful, lovely piece of equipment.
Yeah, I think the ergonomics are so important as to how it feels to you. You know, you could shoot with anything, and you can get great yeah. shots with anything. But you know, I think it's got to feel comfortable. I really miss being able to change the aperture on the on the lens. I started moving towards the Micro Four Thirds,
mm-hmm.
and which is really nice. I had the Olympus CM5. I liked it a lot, but I always had to raise it to my eye to change the aperture.
Sure, right, and okay.
Little things like that. I missed it.
Yeah. Well, I love the GXR because it just gave me the confidence. It gave me my mojo back because mm-hmm. I know that I lost it for a while, and I lost interest in it because I wasn't getting the results that I wanted. But having sort of taken this on, I just love it, and I think the shots that I'm getting from it now are far better than anything I got from the Fuji.
It's let's back up a little bit because you did mention that to me the other day in an email that you said you've been away from shooting for a while, or maybe just
wasn't as much as I should as I would have done before. With the GRD3, I was doing quite a bit. I had it in my pocket all the time, or in my case, and I used it all the time. But the Fuji, it was a nice camera, and it did great night shots and that, and probably in the right hands it would do great street shots, but for me it just wasn't mm-hmm. right, and I lost my confidence with it, and I wasn't doing particularly well with it, I don't think. I got one or two decent shots, but not the hit rate was very poor in comparison.
Wow, so did you just get away from shooting altogether for a while, or?
I did it less frequently. Sometimes I go a couple of weeks without doing street stuff, you know, and But I don't blame the camera. I blame, you know, just the situation. The camera's a great camera. There's no doubt about it. And if anyone's considering getting the Fuji 100S, X100S, yeah, go for it because it's a wonderful camera. But it just did not suit me in the end for what I wanted to do with it. That's just what happens sometimes.
So what were you shooting with when you were in New York?
When I was in New York, crikey, the GRD3, I think, and the Canon. I'm just trying to think, what was I shooting in New York? Crikey. It might even have been the X100S, actually, my last trip to New York. September. September last year, that would have been the 100S and the Canon.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, like I said earlier, I saw you did a photo walk with Don Springer. He's the street shooter.
Yeah.
If anybody doesn't know, he's one of the... I'm just saying this for our listeners' benefit, that he's one of the publishers of Inspired Eye, which is a brilliant magazine. And so I thought it was interesting. So you went on a photo walk with Don. I love his blog and his philosophy.
Yeah.
And so what was it like spending the day with him on the street? Did you go out and
Oh, it was
walk up the
great
street?
fun. Yeah, I mean, with Ray Sachs and Don, these are two great guys. I mean, they've been very encouraging to me in my street photography, and they've had great words of wisdom for me. Don's a completely different shooter, obviously, to Ray and what he produces, and I like what both of these guys produce, and it was great fun for me to watch them, and I tended to watch them more than actually do the photography, really. And I came away with very few photographs because I just wanted to sit there and watch how they did it and learn. But it was, I wasn't on my best mettle that day. I got I got sunstroke.
Oh.
And yeah, I was actually quite ill with it. And I had a big blister with my Parkinson's. I've got numb feet. I cannot feel my feet, the soles of my feet. And I had a blister, and I didn't realize I had a blister on my foot. And later on, I found one, and it was like the size of a pita bread.
Oh boy.
It was like piece of pita bread, this blister, and it was quite painful, and it became ulcerated later on. It had to be medically looked at. And but I got this sunstroke, and at the end of the day, after the shoot, I went. I think Ray had to go, and I went with Don for a beer, and I had a cold beer. And that was all I remember. I remember this beer hitting me. The next thing I remember is actually waking up on the train at Penn Station with all my camera equipment scattered around me, around the seat, with me laying on the floor. And the
Oh.
train captain saying, "Hey, buddy, we're here, and get off my train." And that was all I remembered. So anything between sinking that beer with Don. And then when I got back to the hotel, I found an excess fare document in my pocket, where I because I got the wrong train back. I got an earlier or a later train. I can't remember which it was. And they fined me $25 or $50 or something for taking the wrong train. I've got no recollection of that at all,
Wow.
of paying it. Yeah, I was in a bad, bad way. Bad way. I think Don told me that he took me to the station by cab. And saw me onto the train, and God bless him, great guy, great guy. But yeah, that could have ended so unhappily. But the other part of this story was that because I went to New York with my wife, but we stayed in separate hotels because she was with her daughter-in-law and they wanted to go shopping, and I wanted to go street shooting. So I stayed down Chinatown, they stayed Midtown. And but when we got back together later on for the flight home, I actually fainted on the flight going back home, and I fainted in the aisle in the night, and it was dark because all the blinds were down on the aircraft. And I managed to speak to my wife before I fainted, and she was tending to me on the floor when one of the stewards came out, tripped over me, and fell headfirst into the door of the aircraft and smashed his head, concussed him, bleeding. So when we landed, there were two ambulances waiting for us to take us away to hospital. So, why I fainted, nobody knows. But him, he was concussed and had quite a bad cut on his head. That
Oh,
was on
wow.
a Virgin flight. Yeah, so that bit of drama there as well. Don't go out with me because it could be a disaster zone.
Well, if you come here, why don't you come in the winter or something then? But we
Oh,
don't have sun, so
no, maybe, yeah.
we probably have less sunshine than you do.
Yeah,
Man,
quite
it's,
eventful, very
well,
eventful.
I know Philadelphia can get pretty hot and humid. Was it a real hot day?
It was, yeah, it was for me. And I think the other thing, if I remember right, that contributed to that was my medication for Parkinson's. They'd messed up my prescription. I think I was taking more than I should have done, which affected my blood pressure as well. So my blood pressure was quite low. So every time I sat down, when I stood up, I felt giddy. And so it was an interesting day. I loved it. I loved being with the guys, Ray and Don. It was good fun, but it was I was unwell. I was unwell, and next time I go back, I think I'll make a better fist of it, I think, this time.
I almost hate to say this, but that reminds me of the old saying, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the show?
Yeah, I understand
So
that joke. Yeah, good one.
yeah.
Yes.
So
Yes.
other than that, how was your day shooting with those guys? You said you didn't do much, and I can imagine because you have your own routine when you're out shooting on the
Yeah.
street, and all of a sudden you've added two other people into the mix. So you're not going to really be into the zone like you normally are. And
No, that's right. And it was watching what they were interested in, you know, seeing how they approached people and how they did their stuff. And I mean, Ray was rather more subtle. And Don won't mind me saying this because Don is a no-nonsense guy, and you've seen what he's written. You know, he doesn't take any flack from anyone. And Ray and Don are totally different in their approach. And Don will walk up to somebody behind them and go bang, 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 and shoot. And he doesn't give a monkey's, you know, whether they see him or not. Ray's a bit more subtle about his, or rather more subtle about his shooting than Don. So watching those two guys at work was fascinating for me, absolutely fascinating.
So, what was your big takeaway from that experience?
Well, I suppose really that I could never emulate certainly Ray or nor Don. It's because when I first started out, I tried to process in a way that Ray did, because Ray's stuff had a lot of impact for me, I think. I liked his style, the way he post-processed his work. But I realized that it wasn't just the post-processing, it was how close he got to people. And the things that he saw were things that I wouldn't have seen myself necessarily. And so he was, I just marveled at Ray's work. And I just think I actually wrote something about him. I just thought that he's one of America's chroniclers, if you see what I mean. That he goes into the heart of America that normally you know, other people wouldn't see, into the sort of the heartland and the mums and pops type of America that we don't very often see. And he chronicles Americana. That's what I'd say, and I've told him that myself. Everything about America that you wouldn't normally see from over here, he's got the eye for it. And his stuff fascinates me, and I could never emulate that because I'm not there and I don't see it as often as he would, you know.
Yeah, because if you just go to New York or you go to Philadelphia, you're not seeing a lot of the country. I mean, they're both great places, but they're not really representative of the rest of us. And
It's the clarity that he delivers for me, so that pinches it, you know, and I just marvel at how clear his shots are. But you know, steady hand and all that. But he has no fear. He can get in close and he can take his shot. And he's a very clever guy at doing it. I love his work. I love it.
I was happened to catch Don and Oliver's podcast the other day. They haven't been recording too many because of a couple things, but I always like to listen to it. And Don said something about, you know, your photos, everything you shoot should, I know I'm paraphrasing and I'm probably getting it wrong, but this is what I got out of it. Everything you shoot should really be a portrait of yourself, a self-portrait in some way. Or, you know, have a personal connection in some way, and it makes the photograph much stronger. And
Yeah, it's because it's what your it's it, the photograph must be something to do with your interests, what you're interested in. What I'm interested in and what Don might be interested in shooting are two totally different things. And I think Don's shots are a reflection of him and his experiences in life. For me, when I go out and shoot, I have things that I'm interested in, which I like to take shots of smokers. Because I think people that smoke reveal quite a lot about themselves in the way that they smoke. You know, the deep lungers, as I call them, the nervous flickers of the cigarette. You know, tap 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 tap. The ones who smoke from the corner of the mouth. There's a lot of personality in the way people smoke, and it could be the way somebody smiles or the raising of an eyebrow, the way they carry themselves, what they're dressed in. Those are the sorts of things that I'm interested in. So, you know, yeah, you could say it's probably right. Yeah, it's actually part of you. What you're interested in, you tend to clothe your pictures in your own personality and what you're interested in. I think yes, yeah, I think he's dead right.
Yeah, there's that cop again.
Yeah, he is.
Tell you one of your photos. I didn't even put it on the list. It's not a street photo, but it's one of yours I really like, and I think it's because you have such a strong personal connection. And that's the photo of your two ants in their kitchen.
You know, I'm glad you said that because that means a lot to me. That when I took that shot and then I got it back and saw it, I felt this well of emotion again. And I call that one a slice of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that shot. I truly love it. And I'm going to have that one framed because I just adore it. And I wouldn't say it came from deep within, but my Aunt Kitty, who was on the left, didn't want her picture taken. That's why she stuck in, that's why she sat in that corner.
Uh-huh.
See, half of her there, you know. Whereas my Auntie Molly, she wasn't bothered by it. And I got the shot. And it was a silent shot because I had my camera on silent. And I'm so glad that I got that because, for me, that photograph says a lot about them. They're comfortable in silence with each other. They'll talk or they'll sit silently. They don't care. They're comfortable sisters. And they're good old girls from the East End. They're salt of the earth. And when I say salt of the earth, when they're gone, life won't taste the same, do you know? You need salt to add taste to things. And Kitty's in her 80s and Molly's in her 70s, you know. And they're not going to be around forever, as we know. And when they're gone, life would be a lot poorer without them being around because they're such characters. I love them both dearly.
Yeah, well, it shows in the photo. I mean, I could feel a real strong connection there. And
yeah, I love it.
And it's just a great shot. It's perfectly lit and, you know, all those technical things, but I just love it. You know, you've got a lot of photos on there, and it jumped right out at me.
Well, I'll just say thank you for that because that means a lot to me. That means that you saw what I saw in it, and that's brilliant then for me. I love that idea.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
I took it on myself for several years ago to start photographing older people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to like senior communities and do portraits for nothing, just and give them the portraits. And my wife's mother I was very close with her. She got sick and she had a stroke and, you know, went through some, it was pretty tough.
Yeah,
and I didn't have the heart for it after that. And you know, I think it's so important that we, you know, we photograph that older generation because, like you said, they're not going to be around long, and they're great photographic subjects. You know,
and it's a chance to show the world in 200-300 years time what it was like to be around at this time. Because one of the things I've always, ever since I was a kid, I've always wanted to go back to Victorian times. If somebody could transport me to the streets of London of Dickens, I'd love that, or even earlier. And it's our chance, because of the digital photography, we can leave a huge amount for people in 100 years, 200, 2,000 years' time, you know, that people will look back on what we did and how we did it and think, good grief, how did they survive?
That's true.
How did they got into this machine which gave out noxious gas to get from A to B?
Yeah, this flammable liquid.
Yeah, that's right. So you filled up this thing with flammable liquid and got inside this cage and drove it somewhere.
Yeah, they were crazy.
Yeah, crazy people, crazy.
No, it's funny you bring up time travel. I'm fascinated with time travel myself, and I've daydreamed of the same type of thing. You know,
I'd love to go back, and I think this is our chance. You know, people in millennia time, you know, they're going to have this opportunity to see this sort of thing. They won't need to transport themselves back because it'll all be there for them in moving film and in stills.
We used to have a black and white specialist here in town. And that's all they did. They processed black and white, you know, silver film. And they had these glass negatives from around 1900, late 1800s, that somebody gave them. And then they process the prints, and they were the sharpest photos I've probably ever seen. And I mean, they look like they were just taken yesterday.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's just amazing to see in that kind of detail, you know, life over 100 years ago.
Yeah. Well, as a kid, I always thought that life was in black and white.
Uh-huh.
In the old days, as I called it. You know, the Second World War to me as a kid was fought in black. It was black and white. When somebody showed me a piece of war documentary in color, I said, that's not the war. The war was fought in black and white.
Yeah, that's funny. I thought, by the way, we're the same age, you know.
And, okay.
And I feel the exact same way.
Yeah. The war was black and white. It was never in color, ever.
Yep. Exactly. Let's take a look at some of your photos.
Sure.
I talked about one, and another one that really jumps out at me when you talk about smoking. It's a photo of a guy taking a puffing on a cigarette. Top Santee, Santee.
Oh, this guy's called Mark.
Mark.
He's a French guy. Yeah, it was. We were staying on holiday near the town of Dinan, and we went into town one day on market day, and I went into a bar to get a cup of coffee, and this guy Mark was there. I would say that he was shabbily dressed, but he had dignity about him. The clothes he wore actually were good quality, but they'd seen better days, I think. He had a walking cane, he had a packet of gitane, and he had a glass of brandy and a coffee. And he looked really, his face was very lined. And in my best pidgin French, you know, I told him that he had a very interesting face and asked him if I could take a picture of him. I was risking a lot here because the French are notoriously private people, and you never ask them questions about their lives, let alone ask them to take their picture. And to my astonishment, he just shrugged his shoulders and went, oui. Walked outside with me, he sat down, smoked a cigarette, and I took a couple of shots. But what I didn't notice until later on that Top Sante magazine was there. So obviously the incongruous juxtaposition of him smoking and looking very ill next to this Top Sante magazine made the shot. But I can't claim that I knew that was there, to be honest about it. It's just a happy coincidence.
Take them while you get them. It's still a great shot.
Yeah, Mark, his name was, yes.
You got a lot of really good photos in New York. There's a photo of three women on the street. New York Reworked is the name of the
shot. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Well, I call that Reworked because when I first started this off and saw Ray's work, I used to use Nick's Silver Effex Pro. And anything I took, I Effex Pro'd it to within an inch of its life, you know, very heavily. Mm-hmm. And I've gone past that now. I'm a bit more mature and I use it far less than I used to. So I've reworked that one. But that was one of my first street shots ever, those three girls walking down the street beatboxing into bars of candy or bars of chocolate. And I had my Panasonic GF2 and I saw it happening and I clicked and got the shot. But the first one was the hoodie guy. I don't know if you've seen the hoodie guy with the waitress on a smoke break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too.
Yeah, that unfolded in front of me, and I got the shot. I didn't realize that what I'd actually got was a street shot. I saw it with my cop eyes, I think, that this guy was walking towards me, and his face was completely in shadow under two hoods, not just the one. And all you could see was his goatee beard, and he was whistling. And you could see the waitress looking at him very suspiciously while she was about to light a cigarette. And I had the camera, the GF2, around my neck, and it's probably level with my sternum, probably. And I just had my hand on the trigger, and I just shot it, not realizing until I got back to the hotel just what I'd captured. And that fascinated me. And I went out to try and find some more stuff to see what I could do, because New York is famous for having weird and wacky people or interesting people walking around, and it doesn't take long. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Those are two of my first street shots.
Yeah, I think in New York there's almost too much to shoot.
Yeah, you can end up with a rick in your neck. And in fact, the best street shot ever, and I missed it, there were three nuns, believe it or not, three nuns up by Columbus Circle. And one of the nuns was standing on the grid over the train, you know, where the underground trains are.
Uh-huh.
As the train went underneath, a blast of air went up, and her skirt actually lifted up. Mm-hmm. If I'd had a camera in my hand at that time, well, I did have a camera, but I was just too slow for it. That would have been the shot of the century for me. That would have been that Marilyn Monroe moment, you know. But I missed that. I missed it.
The one that got away.
Yeah, absolutely. The one that got away. Yes. Yeah.
You know, your hoodie shot reminds me of one. I don't know if you know Joe Wakefall at all. He's a street photographer in New York. A friend of mine. I've known him for several years. And his favorite photo of mine is a guy walking down the street with a hood on. And you can see his face. Scariest looking person I ever saw. I can't believe Joe actually took a photograph of him.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, he had cojones of steel for taking that phone.
Yeah, I tend to sort of I think it's I enjoy doing it, but sometimes it's not that important that it's worth getting your face filled in for, you know. Choose your shots, and that's why I admire people like Bruce Gilden sometimes, that he's gone into places I would never dare to go into and taken the shot.
So how do you think he'd do on the streets of a small town in France?
I think he'd probably do quite well. He's still
Yeah.
got his nose intact. He's not been flattened over the years, so he must have some charm to talk his way out of trouble, I'm sure.
Yeah, never mind. Speaking of Bruce Gilden, you have a photo of him. And you said you interviewed him?
Well, no, I didn't actually. I came
Oh.
across him. Can I say this? Can I say that I pissed him off?
Yeah, sure.
Because at the time, I was using a monopod to hold the camera because I was unsteady. And I went out street shooting me on Oxford Circus, which is very well known in London for its shopping. And there was this guy there with two assistants, and they put filming into his camera, and he took the camera, then just jumped in front of people and took a shot with the flash attached to this Leica camera. And he looked at me and he said, "Hey, you know, what are you doing using a monopod? Like you jerk," sort of tone to his voice. I said, "Well, you know, I've got Parkinson's, so do forgive me, mister, for using this." He said, "Well, I'm Bruce Gilden. Do you know who I am?" I said, "I've never heard of you, mate." It really pissed him off. I had no idea who he was. He said, "Well, I'm Bruce Gilden. Magnum?" I said, "No, I used to watch Magnum on TV. It was a dream, wasn't it?" And
Don't look like Tom Selleck, yeah.
I cheesed him off somewhat. And I watched him and I thought, "I don't like what you do. I don't like that style of photography, that jumping in front of people, put them in fear for a second." And then they realise what he's doing, you know, that he's not actually about to mug them, he's actually taking a picture. So, you know, who am I to say? I mean, I've been doing photography since 2011, but it's not my cup of tea. Whether what he's doing is any good or not, that's not for me to say. There's probably people more intelligent, more erudite in that sphere than I am, who could say whether that's good photography or not, but it's certainly not my cup of tea.
Well, hey,
Yeah, but I
it's
cheesed him
art.
off anyway, so by not knowing who he was.
That's funny. So he was okay with your monopod after you told him that you had
Oh,
Parkinson's? Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. Well, so hopefully we can include this photo in the article. I really like it.
I
Yeah.
mean, I loved his work. I mean, I saw the work he did with the Yakuza and with some shots he did in the UK in a place called Newcastle, up in the northeast of England. He took some fabulous stuff, there's no doubt. He's a great photographer, and I always equate it to, you see a lot of these works, you think, what the hell is that someone's painted? But you like Mondrian with his lines and coloured squares. You know, when he first started off, Mondrian was actually what I call a proper artist. He did proper portraits and then developed into this sort of abstract, the squares. And Bruce Gilden is a fabulous photographer who's gone off into this sphere of street photography, but he is a great photographer. So I can't take that away from the guy. I just don't like what he does on the street, that's all.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I don't think anybody expects it to be unanimous, that's
No,
for
that's
sure.
right. It's very subjective.
Yeah, some of those street shots of his, I think are brilliant. Some of them I don't care for, I guess, just like anything else.
And he probably doesn't care too much for my work either.
I probably
Quid
wouldn't
pro
like mine
quo.
at
Quid pro quo.
all. That's right. So let's take a look at another one. You've got another photo here of a group of buskers. I think that's the name of it. Yeah, Buskers Three plus Kids and Clappy Hands. I love the titles of your photos, by the way.
They're very sort of I don't know what you'd say, just what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
That one was there's a place called Brick Lane, which is a big Sunday market, and the very achingly hip people go to that area and eat and drink and go around the market and spend huge amounts of money on pieces of tat, you know, to take home with them. And these two buskers are there, and one of them looked very much like an actor whose name I can't think of. Who's in the Pirates? What's his, Johnny Depp?
Oh yeah, Johnny Depp,
One of them
yeah.
looks like Johnny Depp, one of the guys, busking. And I was about to take a shot of the buskers when these hands clapping just appeared. And I shot because I knew instantly when I shot that those hands would make the difference to the picture. Other people may well not agree, but for me that makes the shot, and it may be for somebody else who actually commented on Flickr that the hands made the shot. The shot of the buskers on their own, again, like shooting fish in a barrel, you know, the buskers, schmuskers, whatever, you know, it's people take shots at buskers all the time. There's nothing special about it, but those hands intruding into that camera space, clapping to the beat of the music, makes the shot for me. So I kept that one.
I agree. And you're right. You know, street people, street musicians, they're, like you said, easy because they want to be photographed. So.
Yes.
Well, there's another one, I think, similar and it's not similar because the subject matter is different. The kiss, the look, and the hurry by.
Yeah.
And I think what really makes it all work is the hurry by person, the person walking out of the frame.
Yes.
And you've got the motion blur there and everything else is sharp.
Yeah. It's a bit like Rodin's The Kiss, isn't it? Though the two going hard at it there on the bottom left-hand corner. Then the look of the girl sort of center stage looking off to her right as they're kissing. Then the other guy just sort of disappearing out of the picture, who's part of it but not part of it. He's not witnessing it, but he's actually sort of exiting stage right. I just saw the picture. I just saw what was unfolding, and I took the shot. There's no great skill in that. I just raised the camera and took it, and that was it. And I post-processed it in such a way that pleased me, pleased my eye, and not anybody else's. And people seemed to like the shot.
Yeah, well, I did.
Good. Thank you.
It's funny, just a little background. I picked out some photos to talk to Pete about, and he told me, I would never have picked those. here's some ones that I think we should talk about. So I thought that was kind of funny. And
I saw the ones that you picked out, and it's funny, you know, people's taste is different. I mean, I took the shots and put them on there, so if you like them, that's great, because I like them too, but they wouldn't be necessarily the ones. I mean, I've put some stuff in. I've joined the Royal Photographic Society, and I've put some street shots in to a competition. And I've come to the conclusion that what I like and what the judges might like in terms of street photography are probably going to be very different. So I've got one that's called In the Palm of Her Hand, where the way the Uriah follows this girl who's got the mobile phone in her hand, it looks like there's a guy in her hand, you know, from the shoulders up. It may well be the judges won't like that. They'd like something a bit more esoteric, a bit more sort of cerebral, possibly. I don't know. Because that one is too literal, maybe. It's too easy to see. There's no great thought process goes into seeing the picture. If you understand what I mean.
Yeah, so I do.
That won't get anywhere. And it's I put a street shot into a competition fairly recently, which was an Orthodox Jewish kid and his girlfriend, you know, exchanging glances, which to me... meant a lot, but the judge gave it a D, you know, and I thought it was worth more than a D. I was outraged that he gave it a D because he didn't see what I saw. But it's just one of those things. You think, well, you can't see it. That's your loss if you can't see what I saw. But does that sound arrogant? I don't know.
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all. And, yeah, some people just don't get it.
True.
Yeah, I like this one you did in Grand Central Station. Speaking of being literal, I probably like too many things that are pretty obvious. But I don't know. I just like the way it's put together and the way you capture the light coming in the window overhead and spreading out throughout the building.
Yeah, it's been slightly enhanced, as you can imagine. But the light has to be there in the first place to be enhanced, as you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, dramatic effects. I've always been with Grand Central. I always wanted a shot. There's that famous one from the 30s where the light's coming in through those top windows. You know, that famous picture?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I wanted to emulate that. And so I got my opportunity. And not as good as the 30s shot, I don't think, obviously. But it seems to work, and some people seem to like it. So that's great for me. People like it. In colour or in black and white. You know, it's... And I like the sort of the tableau, the different lives walking through the station.
Yeah, I guess I tend to be drawn towards slices of life type things.
Yeah, there was another shot which you liked, I think, that you mentioned, which was there's about 20 or 30 people in the shot, and it's a panoramic.
Oh, yes. And
Tableau.
yeah, and I chose that for a reason. Again, it's a slice of life type of thing, but I like the way you processed it. And I did really just wanted to know more about that. First of all, it's a panorama, so how did you
Yeah, well,
shoot it?
it was one shot. That was one shot, and it was just a normal shot, but it didn't look right in portrait. I did it in portrait format, and it didn't look right. There was too much space at the top, too much at the bottom. So I just thought, I wonder what would happen if I cropped it to make it look panoramic. And it's a thousand times better in panoramic than it was in its original format. And the reason I like it is because you've got people exiting or entering stage left and right, people looking stage left and right, looking behind themselves, away from the camera, looking towards the camera. You've got the colours, you've got the diversity, the ethnicity. I just thought, this is London. This is the London that I live in, or that I visit on a regular occasion. This is what it's like. The colour, the just the different people in that one spot, and that's why I called it Tableau. I love that shot. I really enjoyed processing that one. And I kept in colour deliberately to concentrate the eye on various different aspects of the picture rather than making it black and white. That the different colours attract you to that particular part of the picture, so you can see who the person was, where they may well be from.
And how did you process the color?
I've ran that one through Colour Effects Pro 4, and used, let's think, do you know what I think I did with that one, which I've done a few times and it seems to work well? I use Glamour Glow, and then it sounds strange, but then I use Detail Enhancer on top of Glamour Glow, but it seems to work.
And this one's pretty recent, isn't it? I'd say it's
Yeah,
got,
last few weeks, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, now you said earlier that you used to really use Silver Effects Pro a lot on your black and whites, but you've
Yeah,
moved away
yeah.
from that. Are
Yeah.
you doing much black and white enhancement now, or what are you doing?
I tend to use Lightroom, and I just do the tweaks of the black sliders, the shadows, the whites. Basically, yeah, my Lightroom sliders are the ones I do my black and white with invariably. Yeah, I very, very, very rarely use Silver Effects Pro now. It's there on my computer, but I can't think of the last time I touched it, to be honest. I
Yeah,
turn to Colour Effects Pro more than anything now for my night shots.
I have Silver Effects Pro, but I got the free deal for a week or whatever, and I never
Yeah.
bought it, and I keep thinking maybe I should because I see all these cool things that people do with it, but
I've gone away from that now.
Lightroom with some presets,
Yeah.
it's just fine.
That's adequate. Yeah, adequate for me now. Yeah, I don't over em I sort of had this risk of over embellishing things, and sometimes my pictures looked a bit muddy, where if you look too closely, they just looked, you had the basic outline, but then when you look close, they look muddy. That's the only way I can explain it, really. That's what Silver Effects Pro did. That layer upon layer upon layer, then put it back in Lightroom and tweak it in Lightroom. You just end up buggering the picture up.
Yeah, I think there's always the tendency to get something to make it just a little bit better. It's like being a golfer, A golfer will spin anything to shave one stroke off their game.
Yeah. You're only as good as your last shot. Yeah.
Yeah,
Bring on the
no.
next one.
Yeah, pretty much. So, Pete, if somebody were to come to London, where would you recommend that they shoot on the street? What's your favorite place?
I'd say the Brick Lane, Spitalfields Market area, and the City of London, the financial heart. The Spitalfields and Brick Lane, for its grittiness, there's a historic, it's where the Jack the Ripper murders took place, and there's still areas that look the same from Jack the Ripper's time. But there's a lot of interesting stuff around there. You've got the market stalls, you've got the achingly hip people there. Interesting shops, interesting buildings. You've got a lot of buildings that were built from reclaimed timber from the Great Fire of London. Restaurants. Yeah, it's just an interesting place, Brick Lane, Spitalfields, on a Sunday. Camden Market is another interesting place. The market on the south of London Bridge. What's that market down in south of where you get the food and all that?
Oh, Barra.
Borough Market.
Which side of the river?
South of the river, south of London Bridge.
Okay.
Borough Market. It's the food market. A for fabulous food and B just for interesting people to photograph, you know.
Trying to picture it. When I was in London, I stayed right in that area.
Oh, right, okay. See, what I'd like to do ideally is I would like to, and I've never got off my backside to do it, but it's just like one of these things that I sort of mess around with in my head. I want to buy a Z4 car, BMW Z4. I've had one before. And I want to take people into London and do a speed street shoot or a speed London shoot where they can sit there and I'll drive them around London in my sports car, give them a commentary while they take the pictures through the open top of the sports car. I think that sounds like a real nice job to have, but I've just not got the gumption to get off my backside to sort it out.
Sign me up, I'll do
Whether it'll work or not, yeah, I don't know. I mean, people may well be scared off, but
it.
it's just one of my fantasy things. I'd love to scoot somebody around because I enjoy showing people London. So it wouldn't be a job, it would be just fun. A, you'd be in a sports car, B, you'd be doing things that you like, and C, you'd be meeting different people and sort of helping them to take the pictures that they'd like to take. Maybe one day I'll do it.
Yeah, the hard part's buying the car.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I've had two lovely cars. I love them.
Oh, they're beautiful. My neighbor had, I think he had the Z1
Yeah.
or Z1, sorry.
Yeah, the one where the doors drop down. They sort of mechanically go up and down the doors.
Maybe his was a 2. All I know is he spent a lot of money on it.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he could afford it. Anyway, so tell us, who's been your greatest influence photography-wise?
I think I mentioned it before was Ray. I love Ray's work. I liked what he did and how he did it, and I tried to emulate that in the beginning, but I obviously matured into my own style now. But certainly, he and Don with their encouragement as well. I can't do what Don does. Don has got a special, what I call a witchetty camera. The things he sees are the things that I don't see. So he's got a special brain and a special way of seeing things, I think. And Ray's got his way of seeing things as well. And I can never emulate them, but they have influenced my work, I think, certainly. Probably Ray more than Don. I admire Don's work greatly. And sometimes I can see what he sees, and sometimes he sees things in mine that I don't see myself. But, he's given me great encouragement, Don. And Ray is probably more my style. And if I could get half the shots that he gets, half as sharp, I'd be a very happy man.
What a great experience to be able to go out and photograph with two people who are such an influence on you. Not most.
Absolutely. Yeah, certainly. It would be like a landscape photographer going out with, I don't know,
Ansel Adams.
Ansel Adams or or even Turner, going back in time with
Sure.
and something like that. Yeah.
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 Cool. So what do you have going on? I think you've got a show coming up later this year.
Exhibition, yeah. I've got an ex. There was I was due to have an exhibition this year in a place called the Beecroft Gallery, which in Essex is quite sort of prestigious because they have a show once a year with artwork. It's paintings, drawings, sculpture, photographs. It's quite a big deal. And I was penciled in for that, but the building was decrepit and they moved out from there into a new building in Southend in Essex. But then they found they had asbestos in there, which they had to clear out. So I've managed to get myself a slot now. And my exhibition, it'll be street and night shots, my nightscapes. They've given me what they call 19 linear yards of exhibition space in Southend Central Library from December the 20th until March the 21st. So I've got 3 months' worth of exhibit, which is fascinating for me. Be interested to see how that one pans out. Obviously, I've got to get my acting gear now and get some look back at my catalogue and also go out and take a few more pictures and then get them framed and mounted and whatever. And I featured in Essex Life magazine this month in relation to Parkinson's and my photography. They did a double page spread for me. I sent you a link to that on an email.
Yep. Yeah, we'll include that too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very nice of them to do that for me. They showed some of my pictures, street shots, my nightscapes here and abroad, and yeah, they've done me proud. And the magazine is a national magazine. That each county in the UK has its own magazine, and it's published by Archant Publishing. And yeah, two page spread. Yeah, it's great, marvelous for me. I loved it. Fascinating to see myself in print in a national magazine. That's lovely. I loved it.
Yeah, that's quite an honor. We'll definitely include that. You know, I did remember one other thing I wanted to ask you before we go, if you have another moment. Mm-hmm. London has a really active street photography community. And
yeah.
We've met a number of them here. I don't know if you get to meet any of the other street photographers in town. I know there's a new collection.
Well, I see them all the time. And it's funny, actually, because you know who the street shooters are. When you go out, mm-hmm. you know if someone's a street shooter, don't you? The way they hold the camera, the way they look.
Yep.
And I see them all the time now. If I'm out on the street, I know exactly who's street shooting and who isn't. And you'll acknowledge each other sometimes. In fact, one of my shots in New York, I actually caught a guy who was, he'd been training me for about half an hour. And every time I looked somewhere, I saw him lurking. And just at the right time, I turned and bang, I snapped him just in the act of taking a shot of me. And I had a chat with him after, because he was walking around with a great big bloody Canon. I think they had a 5D Mark III with a big lens on it. And I said, do you want to be a bit more subtle about it, man? You know, you're being too open and... people can see what you're doing.
That's funny.
But I called him trying about to take it, and you can see him in the picture actually sort of frozen in horror as I snapped him. But the funny thing is actually is there was one on there. I've included it in the list of my favorites. There's a guy standing by a trash can with his hand in his pocket who looks for all the world like he's getting a gun out of his pocket. In front of him there's a guy walking towards him with his jacket open.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like he's reaching for a gun as well. But in fact, when you look closely, the guy has got a Panasonic camera strapped diagonally across his chest.
Oh, I see it. Yeah.
And there's a lead going into his mm-hmm. up his arm. He's about to press the trigger on this guy or me. So there's me shooting a street shooter who's shooting a guy who wasn't actually going to shoot him, but was about to put a bottle in the trash can.
Well, the camera's pointed the wrong way. Well, maybe he was going to move it, but
yeah.
That's interesting. Oh, wow, that's a great catch.
Yeah, do you know, and I didn't realize that. Somebody actually told me that because I just didn't see it because it was a bit too small for me to see, really. It just interested me. The guy by the trash can was the one I saw initially. That's what made me take the shot. Somebody later directed my attention to the guy with the camera and the lead saying, hey, that guy's a street shooter. I'll claim it. Yeah,
maybe he's a subscriber and he'll see.
Maybe it could be. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he recognizes himself.
That's funny. All right, well, Pete, hey, thank you very much for being with us. Real quick, where can people find you?
Online? Well, I'm on Flickr, and if you just search for my name, Peter Tachauer on Flickr, Tachauer. You'll just find me either on Flickr or on Smug Mug. 500px I'm on. I think that's about it pretty much, really. And if you search for Flick River, Peter Tachauer, that'll probably come up with a list of I think it comes up with the most interesting photographs by number of visits that it's had. That's it, really. If you just do a search on Google, you'll find me.
Okay. And and we'll have links in the magazine as well.
Sure.
So
yeah.
Definitely people will find it. Yeah, that's plenty of places to be.
Sure. Just thanks ever so much for taking an interest in what I do. I really appreciate it.
Oh.
And it's as I said to you before, I'm not being precious about it. I still can't see what it is that people see in what I do, to be honest. It's I'm just a Joe Schmo who goes out and takes pictures. I'm not one of these guys who knows instinctively what my field of view is or my point of view is, and I just go out and take pictures without thinking too much about it. I'm an instant reaction type guy. I don't plan anything, and I'm prepared. Likewise, you know, for my photography, but I don't. That's about it. I just enjoy taking the picture. Mm. If I come back with something great, if I don't, I don't worry too much about it.
Yeah, even better. You're starting to sound like Woody Allen.
Yeah. People like my work. That's great. If they don't, well, you know.
No, I'm just kidding.
You don't like my principles? I got others. I think that was a Woody Allen quote.
Oh, that's great. No, I was thinking of the one where I'd never belong to a club that would have somebody like me as a member.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah. No, some good ones out there, aren't there?
Yeah,
yes.
There are. Oh, okay.
Before you go, my favorite one is that this is one of my ones. It's I understood what I thought you said, but what you actually said wasn't what I thought you meant.
Yeah. Oh, man.
There we are.
Hey, thanks.
Great talking to you.
Yeah, and, same here, Pete. Thanks. So yeah, let's keep in touch.
I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Take care now. Keep shooting.